This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. It's been less than a week since Governor Evers signed the biennial budget, issuing 51 partial vetoes. So what do we know now more about any fallout or the state's big winners and losers? What decisions are still left on the table? We're going to find out with our two guests today, Scott Bauer from the Associated Press and Anya Van Wagendonk from the from Wisconsin Public Radio. Forgive me. Here we go. Well, let's start with something we know a little bit more about is the summary of the state budget. That there was a historic increase in shared revenue for local communities, changing the funding formula to now come directly from the state sales tax. That early deal also included some pretty significant increases in education funding across the board, including $1 billion for public K-12 schools, paired with the largest expansion in dollar terms for voucher and charter schools. Somewhat of a surprise, we'll talk a little bit about this, were the changes the governor made through his veto pen to tax relief, slashing the GOP's plan from $3.5 billion to $175 million. The governor was not able to eliminate a $32 million cut to the UW budget. However, the budget does feature large workforce housing and PFAS remediation funding, as well as pay raises for state employees and others. Of course, there was also this surprise extension of revenue limits for school districts. We'll talk a little bit about that. I want to ask both of you, first of all, what is there anything missing in terms of key fiscal items from that short list?
Well, I mean, depending on what you're lobbying for or what you care about, there's more we could always talk about. But those are definitely the highlights in there on a budget that's got a little bit of something for everybody.
Were you tracking anything that we didn't mention in that summary list, Anya?
Yeah, there was one item that I found really interesting, which was when they expanded Medicaid reimbursement rates, there was a little something tucked in there about not reimbursing gender-affirming health care through Medicaid. And that was sort of interesting because that's a bill that's been passed elsewhere, and so you can kind of see the state start to wade into some of those culture war issues. Evers vetoed that. It's being challenged in courts elsewhere, but that was sort of an interesting little line item that jumped out at me.
So what were you surprised by? You've covered lots of budgets in your career. Was there anything that really popped out at you as a surprising item?
Well, that they included that was surprising? I think it was surprising that when you had a $7 billion projected surplus that the University of Wisconsin had its budget cut. Not only with that surplus, but given that K-12 schools got, you know, a significant increase, local governments got a huge increase that they haven't gotten in a long time. There was a tax cut. Even under the, you know, even with Evers' veto, there's a tax cut, but the Republicans had a much larger tax cut. And among all of that, you know, because of a variety of reasons, you have the university budget getting cut. And potentially being flat if they can come back in and make the case to get that $32 million. In addition, they don't get their top capital priority project, which is a new engineering building on the Madison campus. So really, like, if you're looking, to me, like, the most surprising thing and that stands out the most is that UW really gets kind of treated the worst out of all the major players. I mean, even transportation gets a bump, you know, reimbursement rates. Everybody gets more money except for UW.
Kind of a bigger loser in the budget
picture.
I know, Anya, you're new to Wisconsin politics and budgets. Was there anything that stood out to you as a surprise?
Yeah, for me, the really big surprise was last week with that partial veto that culminated in a 400-year funding increase for schools. I'd heard about, obviously, the very unique to Wisconsin partial veto power. I didn't quite realize the extent to which it could be, kind of wielded in a more cheeky manner, and so that was a really kind of surprising outcome for me.
Well, let's dive right into that interesting part of our budget process. As we said, the governor issued these 51 partial vetoes, but it's really two that are kind of making the headlines. The one that you mentioned, Anya, by issuing a veto that extends the revenue limits for schools by four centuries. State GOP leadership had tried really to tidy up budget language in a last-minute amendment so that they wouldn't didn't face some of these surprising vetoes. Do you think that this was something they missed, Anya?
It sounds like it. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss has been very critical of it, and one of the things he's kind of pointed to is that nobody could have expected that they could remove a hyphen, that there was sort of something a little bit shady at play there. And so I think that if they expected that there could be those kind of digit-level strike-throughs, that maybe they would have worded things a little bit differently.
Scott, let's talk about the fiscal impact of this change. I know the governor said he thought this change meant more reliable funding for schools that have been living under no inflationary increases. Of course, the GOP leadership says skyrocketing property taxes. Is what's the real story with the impact of this change?
Yeah, well, the real story is we don't know, right? I mean, what will happen is schools will be given until a future legislature and governor change it, or a court comes in and says you can't do this. School districts will know that every year they're going to be guaranteed a $325 per student spending level increase. And so until that changes, that gives them that, when the governor talks about having kind of a long-term comfort level and knowing that their funding level is going to be a certain amount, schools will be able to spend $325 more per student
every single year.
And where do they get their money from? They get it from state aid and they get it from property taxes. So primarily, so Republicans are saying, look, state aid is not going to increase enough to fund that, and so they're going to go to property taxes and they're going to raise your property taxes to meet that spending level limit. But really, I mean, the interesting political thing that it does is it sets the new standard of this is the default. The default is a $325 per year increase. So in future budgets, if there's any change to that, the governor can veto it back to what it is originally. So in other words, if Republicans in a future budget say, well, we want the spending increase to only be $100, just line item veto that and it's $325. So, keeping the current as an increase is really an advantage for the Democratic governor, because he can then, with his veto, return things to the way they are under current law. And that's kind of what happened when Governor Doyle was governor and Republicans tried to cut state aid or the spending level increase, because there was a progression at that point. Governor Evers tried to get one tied to inflation and Republicans rejected it. But this was, as Anya said, really a partial veto that nobody saw coming. None of us saw it coming. Republicans didn't see it coming. I'm not sure many Democrats saw it coming, other than maybe whoever within the budget office found that possibility and Evers ran with it.
Well, you wrote about this year. There's potential legal challenges. How quickly do you think we might see a legal challenge on that?
I mean, Republicans are talking about it. I think there will be some kind of challenge, I think, to the governor's veto authority and whether this is a legal partial veto. The state Supreme Court has been divided on that topic. Just a couple years ago, they had an opinion that struck down some Evers' partial vetoes, but also didn't have a unanimous majority opinion on what he could actually do.
And now the court's changing in August.
The court's changing, and also the justices were kind of all over the place on this. So it's a bipartisan, it's not a clear-cut, partisan issue. The governor's veto power is obviously used by Republicans and Democrats. Scott Walker used a partial veto even with a Republican legislature. Tommy Thompson famously used it. Jim Doyle used it. So it's something that it will be really interesting if and when this gets to the Supreme Court, if they're able this time around to come in with a little more clarity about what is and what isn't allowed.
You were saying that your contacts in other states were kind of like, what's going on in Wisconsin?
Yeah, it really has become kind of a national story, because this is the only state that has a partial veto of this nature. And as Scott was saying, it's been kind of whittled down over the years to prevent some of the kind of more absurd uses of it. But this has like very much become a meme. I think I got sent every possible meme that has been created about Governor Evers in the last week.
Wisconsin's always making headlines on these things, right? So the other big partial veto that the governor issued that maybe was a surprise was related to the tax brackets. He eliminated the lower rates for the top two highest earning brackets. Though that really had been the debate throughout the budget battle, is who was most deserving of a tax break, right? Do you think that, Anya, I'll ask you first, do you think it was a surprise that those top earning brackets were vetoed?
No. Governor Evers made pretty clear that he felt very strongly that tax relief should be targeted to the middle class. He had proposed a tax cut for individuals making under $100,000, for couples making under $150,000. And so the size and scale of the Republican tax cut was just completely, which was targeted more towards higher earners, was just completely sort of at odds with what he has been saying. So I was not surprised that he didn't support the ultimate Republican tax cut. It was done in such a way that the middle-class families that he wants to cut taxes for were also kind of excluded from that final tax cut. He has said that there will be other tax relief coming. Republicans have said, you know, they are going to try to maybe pass a standalone bill to try to get some of that tax relief for higher earners back on the table.
So Fiscal Bureau said this veto results in $36 average at tax cut for average taxpayer compared to what the GOP had proposed, $573 mm-hmm. for average taxpayer. Is there any fallout for Governor Evers in not really delivering a bigger tax relief?
Yeah, so when you look at those averages, of course, everything can be kind of skewed by those higher earners, right? So if you take that $573 average, that's including massive tax cuts for millionaires, people who make more than $1 million a year. So another way to look at it is if you go into the median income people, like around $50,000 to $70,000 a year, even they are going to, I think it was, I don't have the number in front of me, but it would have been $200 and some, I think, under the Republican plan, and now it's like $24 under Evers. So any way you kind of slice it, for the middle class or the median income earners, they're getting a lot less under this tax cut than they would have under the Republican plan. But what Governor Evers' veto does do is put, I think, roughly $4 billion more back into the pot, you know, ultimately, that can be spent later on potentially this tax cut bill that might be coming down the line or something else. So there's
we haven't seen the last of tax reform.
Right. There's a large pot of money out there that the governor, I think, wanted to do more for the middle class. Republicans certainly wanted to do more on tax cuts. So there's an opportunity there for them to potentially come up with something that might get signed into law. There's certainly a lot of money out there for them to tap.
Do you think taxpayers, voters are paying attention? Are they going to be unhappy with Governor Evers kind of cutting their tax break?
Probably depends on whether they're a Democratic taxpayer or a Republican taxpayer, would be my guess, if they're paying close enough attention. But there are definitely stories written about the shift in the tax cut. But income taxes, you know, for a lot of people, you get paid, and one week your paycheck is $5 more than it was the last week because of these tax cuts, and maybe they notice, maybe they don't. But it's certainly something that politicians like to talk about and run on we passed a whatever billion-dollar tax cut, the governor vetoed it or whatever. We're trying to lower your taxes, and Democrats are stopping us. And Democrats will say, Republicans are just trying to, you know, help out their wealthy voters, and they don't care about you guys. So there's plenty for both sides to use here, and we'll be hearing plenty more about it.
And Governor Evers will have another biennial budget before the next election, at least for governor anyway.
So. Correct.
Let's talk about bipartisanship, which kind of leads into people's reactions to these partial vetoes. The governor signed the budget. He said one of the reasons for his vetoes was he wanted to leave enough money on the table for the legislature to come back in the fall and continue some work on things that he thought was a priority. Let's look at what the governor said as he made those vetoes on July 5th. He said, "There's a lot of things I didn't like about it, and I'm sure there's a lot of things I vetoed that Republicans won't like. So yes, I guess it's a compromise. There's a lot of wins here on this, and bipartisanship does work. I do believe we will have adequate resources going forward for the legislature to consider other things like child care." So in contrast, GOP leadership perhaps had a sharper view of the impact of those vetoes. Speaker Voss last week on WISN Upfront said, "That was never part of our discussion, and certainly the idea that we are going to have massive property tax increases, something that the governor said he was against, again, just proves he's a liar. He lied to the people of Wisconsin in the campaign last year. He lied to us during the negotiating process, and now really calls into question his ability to find bipartisan compromises like we've been working on this entire year." Strong words, Anya. Is bipartisanship the biggest loser in the budget?
Well, it's interesting because, of course, there was very little conversation between Republican leadership and Governor Evers in his first term. And so the bipartisanship that we saw during the last 6 months was really kind of unprecedented. The deal that they struck over shared revenue and over school funding was really significant. People that I've spoken to who have been, you know, following this stuff much longer than I have said that it was some of the most significant bipartisan accord, you know, of the last decade, if not longer. And so perhaps that was more of a blip, that level of kind of the strength of those words, as like you just read, maybe signals that there's going to be a little bit more animosity going forward. And we'll see if there's room for those types of bipartisan compromises going forward. But what's sort of interesting is that we had kind of 6 months of this anomaly where they were able to work together on some compromises. So if the camps kind of go back into their corners, I don't think that'll be news to most Wisconsinites.
Do you think the rift will continue, or is this post-budget bluster?
TBD, we don't know. Obviously, the Speaker's words are a lot sharper than really anyone else's. We didn't hear anything from the Senate side on this publicly. And, you know, people, I think, were caught by surprise. There was anger on the tax cut that the governor cut both brackets and not just the highest bracket. I think that might have been a surprise to some Republicans that he cut as much as he did. But, you know, that said, politicians say a lot of things publicly, and then privately things, you know, happen sometimes in a different way. And so I think there remains hope, despite these partial vetoes, there remains hope that as over the next few weeks, as people maybe calm down and start to think about what they want to do going forward, there may be a realization that to get anything enacted, they need to have the governor on board. And so maybe they can reach a deal on a tax cut. But then again, without the pressure of the entire budget being at stake, it will be more difficult to do that.
Well, it seems like both sides here do have something still left on the table that they want. For the governor, he talked a lot about child care. It was a main priority for him. And then obviously tax reform. Do you see potentially those two issues coming together in some sort of grand bargain scenario in the fall?
I think it really remains to be seen. Certainly childcare is one of those issues that voters across the spectrum really care about. The ways that they want to see it addressed, whether kind of supply side or demand side, incentives, things like that, also kind of depends on where you are politically. So there is room perhaps for compromise there because it is just so desired basically across the spectrum, but unclear whether kind of some of these personal differences might get in the way.
What do you think? Grand bargain, child care, tax reform?
Could be. I think UW's in the mix for some kind of bargain. I mean, there's already been talk about the Republicans. They want to find a way to fund that engineering building. But again, Speaker Voss was pretty clear on releasing the $32 million, that he's still not happy with where they are on DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. So there are a hangover of sorts from this budget of issues that are out there for everyone to be angry and salty about. And so we'll see if they can kind of come together to craft maybe a mini budget after the fact to address some of these issues.
Anya, you have been following the child care issue. I wanted to ask you a couple specific questions. There was $15 million set aside in grants for providers, significantly less than what the governor had wanted and what child care advocates had requested. Are you hearing any fallout from the child care industry since the budget?
Yeah. The crux of the fight going into the budget was over whether or not to extend a subsidy program that had been funded by federal COVID relief dollars called Child Care Counts. The governor had requested the full, I think, $340 million to continue that. That was essentially zeroed out and replaced by funding for different types of child care subsidies. So providers that I've spoken to have said that without that federal program or without the dollars to extend that program, that they'll need to either pass tuition costs on to families. Some of them have said that they're going to shut down. And so we will, I think, be seeing a little bit of a jostling as the new programs come into play, as the old money fades out, what that's going to do for these child care businesses. I think it's also, though, worth noting that every kind of expert in this area says that even if you had child care counts, even if you had all the Republican programs, like even if you combined them, there's still a child care crisis in this state, particularly acute in rural areas. And so there's just a shortage of affordable and accessible childcare slots for the children of Wisconsin. And these are really kind of Band-Aid fixes rather than a grand solution.
I'm sure you'll continue to report on that throughout the year. Scott, thinking about some of the changes in the budget that were labeled historic, one of them being the changes to shared revenue, how municipalities and towns and counties were funded. Now they're going to be pulling 1 cent off of the 5 cent sales tax. Does that mean they'll never be coming back to the budget asking for more money?
Well, the legislature surely hopes that they won't be coming back. I mean, that was kind of part of the allure to this whole plan, was that year after year after year, they're getting pressure from local governments to send them more money. And now that they've got it tied to the sales tax, they're hoping that that kind of does away with that constant pressure from local governments. I think it remains to be seen. I mean, clearly under what they've done, without getting into the weeds, there are some communities that do better than others. And so I think there's, you know, nothing is ever solved forever, right? So we have a monumental deal that got done, really kind of unprecedented. And it makes a lot of people very happy. It makes some people happy and makes other people maybe not so happy, or maybe just not wishing it could have done more. So I think we'll always hear feedback from local governments for sure about the way things are working. But in the near term, I don't think there's going to be much of an appetite from the legislature, at least, to revisit that.
And not in the next budget anyway.
Probably not.
Right. So what happens next in Milwaukee? They seem to get some of what they wanted, but it's not really a sure thing if the city council and the county board will pass their sales tax, right?
Right. So Milwaukee City and County do get more money, but not as much as others, because they're also given then the power to raise the local sales tax. And so they're in the process of getting that local approval, and we should have some news on that this week out of the city of Milwaukee. So that remains to be seen. Milwaukee definitely continues to fight for the ability to raise more tax money to help pay for all its various pension costs and other ongoing costs that they have.
But definitely more politics on that issue in Milwaukee.
For sure, yes.
Mm-hmm. Anya, one other area of historic nature was the expansion of school choice funding, per student funding. I know Republicans were very happy about it, that it was a priority for them. A big bump in student payments. Speaker Voss at the GOP convention had said he expects that with that increase, there could be an up to 35% increase in parent enrollment of their children in choice and charter schools. Do you see, or are you aware of how that might impact education funding in future budgets with so many students drawing on that program?
Yeah, it could conceivably have a bit of a snowball effect, right, where you have more students being enrolled in these schools, and so then you have more of a political appetite to increase funding to accommodate more and more students. Of course, you know, Governor Evers ran as kind of the public schools governor. It's very interesting that he presided then over the largest expansion in voucher schools in state history, I believe. And so we'll see, you know, whether this was like a one-time deal, again, between public school advocates and Democrats and Republicans who are more in favor of these kind of choice schools, or whether it sort of becomes a program that builds on itself if they can kind of demonstrate that there is success and kind of hunger for those types of options, whether that will, you know, motivate more funding in the future to continue going towards those types of programs.
Education, always a big slice of the pie in state GPR funding. Do you see this change having a big impact on future budgets, Scott?
It definitely, as Anya said, is a interesting move by the governor, who was very anti-voucher. I mean, it remains to be anti-voucher, but, you know, kind of swallowed it as part of a larger deal that got public schools, you know, a ton more
dollars.
Money. And then out of nowhere, he does this 400-year partial veto, maybe to ameliorate some of those critics on the choice thing. That is one that will continue to be an area that is fought over no matter what happens on the spending limit, and it's an area that continues to be divisive in the legislature.
He had a lot of public school advocates and others asking him to veto the entire budget because of that. Does he have any, Governor, have any political fallout related to that particular decision?
I don't think so. I mean, who knows, right? But I mean, I don't think there would be many Democrats who would say, we're now going to vote for a Republican. I mean, what's their alternative, right? Like, they're going to continue to support Governor Evers or a Democrat over a Republican, most likely, because they're still aligned more broadly with their views on education than perhaps a Republican would be. But there are some people who are angry about that, and there are some on the left who are hoping that there may be some legal intervention related to voucher schools. With our new Supreme Court, perhaps they could rein in the program in some way. But that is a big unknown out there.
Anya Scott mentioned this. I'm curious your thoughts on the UW system. How big of a loser are they in the budget?
Yeah, well, so they requested something like $400 million. And as Scott mentioned earlier, at best, they will get a $0 increase, rather, and potentially that $32 million cut. In theory, the $32 million could be released, but Speaker Voss has said fairly recently that unless they kind of do away with those DEI programs, that it won't be released. And so they are looking at a good chunk of that $400 million was just to keep up with inflation. And so they are facing inflationary increases. Tuition is going up for the first time in a long time. Some campuses are starting to consolidate or consider consolidation. And so there really is a little bit of a revenue crunch for the UW system. And so having $0 coming in, leaders of the UW system have certainly said that they are facing something of a crisis coming forward.
Scott, you mentioned that engineering building on the UW-Madison campus. That was their top priority, and it was not included in the budget. What are the odds of that coming back?
Republicans have talked about wanting to figure out a way to do that, or at least saying that they're open to talking more about that. So I feel like that there's going to be some movement on that, I would anticipate, in the fall potentially. But all of this is kind of subject to the political winds and whims of the day, so it's hard to make any prediction about the future. But there has been talk about that being a need, and you know, Republicans said that to get that $32 million, they need to show what they're doing for workforce development. And the university's response was, well, that engineering building was all about workforce development because we're trying to get more students in these high demand fields that we can't accommodate now because our facility can't, you know, we don't have enough space for all the potential students in that major. So that's an ongoing one and one to definitely watch.
So we talked a little bit before the show about how now you both can relax. The budget is signed. You've got a little bit of a breather. But I'm curious, like, what are you going to be working on next related to these issues? What are you watching for?
Yeah, for me, sort of two things. We talked about the tax cuts, and so definitely looking to see what comes down the pike for that. The co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee said shortly before the budget was passed that no matter what, they are going to get tax cuts passed. And he said whether, you know, the governor vetoes them or not. So we'll see what kind of bill, standalone bill, gets put forward, if any. And then we talked a little bit about Milwaukee, the city and county of Milwaukee. And so I think paying attention to kind of how some of those fiscal choices play out is going to be really interesting. We're also awaiting a potential deal on the Brewer Stadium. So definitely keeping an eye out for that this summer.
Any key things you're watching for, Scott?
Yeah, all the things she said we didn't talk about American Family Field is still hard to say that. Miller Park. So that is a big one that's still hanging out there. I agree. We're going to see what happens in the fall on tax cuts. We've got the political fight over the Elections Commission administrators sitting out there. And we have the UW issue, which we talk quite a bit about. So there's a lot kind of hanging in the air out there. So we'll see what comes of it.
Well, just in time for the budget to wrap up, you'll be heading into election season.
Right.
Perfect.
Well, thank you for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Really appreciate it. And thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civic broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol.